From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 24th day of October, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County to see how a harvest is wrapped up in our part of the world. And as we close out our time together, speaking of wrapping up, we'll check in with the guys up at Wrist Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Mark Russo should join us, meteorologist, to take a look at the weather forecast, not only for the Corn Belt and the rest of this week, what we might find in November, and of course, what's happening in South America as they begin their growing season. It all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon, the 24th day of October. Kurt Kimmel is here. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
So what is it that moved the soybeans today?
Well, it's several factors. One is the continued theme of world vegetable oil. Malaysia palm oil is higher. The Chinese bean oil market was quite a bit higher. We're seeing a lot of speculative interest come in on that type of demand, and in return that put our bean oil higher. If you look at a chart, this is the highest we've been for quite some time in bean oil. So bean oil is kind of the leader in through here. More talk or continued talk of La Nina, kicking in or sticking around. That could affect some world vegetable oil production and also weather here in the U.S. and the Southern Hemisphere. Speculative-wise, we continue to make higher highs and higher lows. Seasonally, we're in that time window where the trade's becoming more comfortable of a fall low at this point in time. Then we saw the weekly export inspections report, and that report gauges the shipments of beans, and the higher the shipments, the better, because we're shipping out what we sold. But this morning's number was a 100 million bushel. That was a record. I think last year's was in the 90s, so this time of year, this is when Asia wants to get these beans, get them moved, so they can turn their little motorboats back to the Southern Hemisphere later on after the first of the year. But the thing about this big sale or shipment, that is, the shipment is, we've brought our shipments up or movement up to 384 million bushels versus 346 million bushels last year. So we're pushing these beans ahead of last year's pace, record sales, record shipments, and that gave the market enough energy here to keep the higher trade that we saw from last night into this morning.
Given the shortage of beans that would have been available in South America because of drought in Brazil and then a crop that was ravaged by floods into Argentina, does this surprise you very much at this point?
Well, I think, we got a big, big, big world consumption of bean oil, bean meal, bean products in general. And I put, there's two markets, the Southern Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere up here where we're at, and it just confirms that this big demand, they don't want to run the risk of a short crop somewhere, so they're going to continue to gather some inventory. Also, too, uncertainty about our political situation as we go into next year, I think also adds a sign that, these cash grain traders, not only domestically but worldwide, just don't want to end up chasing this market because it could be explosive like we've seen in the past.
Why is it the corn was unable to rally along with soybeans?
A spread. These fund traders are not always outright long or short position. They're very sharp individuals. They'll spread the positions, try to take advantage of moves but not be subject to risk. That is the big thing. But fundamentally, DDGs to China's a no-go just due to anti-dumping issues. Then we've seen Vietnam come in as one of our large buyers of DDGs. They've halted some of our purchases due to some beetle issues. And, you know, it's just kind of odds and ends through here where fundamentally there's questions about a little bit of demand. This morning's export inspections report showed we only shipped out 21 million bushels, but overall we're way ahead last year's pace. We've moved 329 million bushels versus last year's 108 million bushels. So surprisingly for this time of year, we are seeing corn move out of the country that's been sold.
Wheat futures in August, late August, early September, bottomed out. They've been climbing since that point. On Commodity Week, we talked a lot about all of the commodities being overbought at this time, and it appears that they heeded that notion today. Were there other things that were happening in that marketplace? And it dropped 12 cents in the lead option December.
Yeah, we technically built a nice base in through there. We had a good breakout to the upside in through there, got the technical crowd on board. You know, season there, wheat gains on corn due to some harvest activity. But we just did not get the momentum to keep the market up there. We got plenty of wheat worldwide. You know, there's some bullish concerns about some dry weather here in the U.S., but other parts of the country continue to look fairly well. So until we see some problems out west or some part of the other countries around the world that produce wheat, it's probably going to be hard to get a whole lot of legs underneath this market other than seeing some short coverage from the commodity funds, which they continue to hold a large short position, over 103,000 contracts short wheat. That's not the largest position they have, but they want to keep a short position on wheat futures.
Last week, USDA's weekly crop progress report showed farmers were lagging just a little behind in their harvest of corn. What do you think will happen this week?
Well, we're hanging in there. I mean, the crop's fairly large as a whole. It's been some wet. It's been wet, guys. It's been slowed down in a few areas, but overall harvest progress expected to be 60 to 65% versus 45% last week, 70% last year, and about 62% average, so they should be on average. Bean harvest expected to be about 75, 80% complete versus 62 last week, and about 80% average. So they're making some good headway. The forecast looks favorable here, you know, for a few days. But, you know, we're still in October. If we were in late November, it would be a different story.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Very good, Todd. Take care.
You too. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, House Ag Committee ranking member Colin Peterson of Minnesota feels there may be some pressure on Congress to do something in the upcoming lame duck session about the sagging farm economy. He's afraid that many farmers will not be able to make financing for the next growing season because of falling revenue thanks to low commodity prices. Peterson said lawmakers would have more money to work with for farm programs if they did the work early. Another reason for getting the work done early is the dairy farming dilemma. A global oversupply of milk is keeping prices lower. The margin insurance program created in the last farm bill also has low participation, and Peterson says it needs improvement. The farm bill won't be an easy matter, even if it's done early. Peterson says urban lawmakers have no idea how much money it takes to plant a crop. Even if the situation gets worse, Peterson says he's not sure if Congress will or can act. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but look more internationally. China is likely to fill the trade vacuum in Asia and the Pacific if the U.S. fails to ratify the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's not a question of if or even when China will lead other Asian-Pacific trading nations away from the U.S. and into their own economic political sphere. They're doing it right now, says American Farm Bureau trade advisor Dave Samuelson.
The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or as we call it, the RCEP, has been going on for the last several years. Not as comprehensive as the TPP, but includes a lot of the same nations in the Asia-Pacific region that the TPP does. But, of course, the centerpiece of it would be China.
Ceding to Beijing, officials argue the role of defining regional trade rules with precedent in China's creating an Asian investment bank. after Congress failed to agree to changes to the International Monetary Fund. President Obama's Trans-Pacific Partnership deal is central to his economic, political, and military rebalance of the Pacific to keep Asian allies from falling under China's influence. Both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton oppose the TPP. AFB Samuelson sees things very differently.
These are just candidates, and neither of them will be president until January 20th of 2017. So we still believe that with the firm support of the administration, if we can get the leadership in both houses of Congress, if they can take care of some of the obstacles, that biologic patents issue that still has to be worked out, I still think there would be support there if it gets on the floor that it would pass. And we're going to keep pushing it until they drop the gavel sometime in December and usher this Congress out.
Samuelson says U.S. allies in the Pacific want America to lead in the region should Washington fail to ratify TPP. Samuelson predicts a period of reassessment of relations, one that experts say will likely benefit China. On that same note, ambassadors from Mexico, Singapore, and Vietnam stressed the need for the U.S. Congress to vote on the TPP during the upcoming lame duck. The ambassadors took part in a recent event hosted by the National Foreign Trade Council. The trade deal includes the U.S. and other countries that collectively make up 40% of the world's gross domestic product, or GDP. Singapore's ambassador said he hopes TPP is ratified and noted there's no plan B for the U.S. He added there's no chance for an alternative agreement between the U.S. and Singapore, saying we need to have a U.S. player in the Asia-Pacific region, and all 11 ambassadors from other countries agree that this is important. The Vietnamese ambassador is touting the benefits of TPP as well, saying 80% of the Vietnam business community is backing the deal. The National Pork Producers Council is one of many organizations urging members of Congress to vote on TPP during the upcoming lame duck session after the elections. And speaking of the pork producers, Rabobank says a lot of pork production and slowing Chinese pork imports are going to pressure American pork prices in the next several months. A Rabobank analyst expects the global pork trade to stabilize while all of the main pork-producing countries are still in expansion mode. That means prospects for 2017 are weaker, and managing excess supply will be key to success. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, American farmers are working really hard right now to finish up the harvest season. Paul Bertels is the Vice President of Production and Sustainability for the National Corn Growers Association, the NCGA, and he says harvest pace is a little up and down in the Corn Belt this fall.
When you look at the Crop Progress Report that came out last Monday, so as of Sunday, we were just nationally, we're just slightly behind the five-year average. But it's really, you know, a tale of a couple different corn belts. The eastern corn belt seems to be a little bit ahead. Northern and western corn belt seems to be a little bit behind pace.
Yields are going to be at an all-time high, so there's going to be a lot of corn to get rid of by the end of the harvest, says Bertels.
This year, you know, we're still on pace to have the largest crop ever. You know, we'll have a 15 billion bushel crop, and, you know, I think when all said and done, that low 170s, you know, somewhere that 173 looks like it may stand as a pretty good number for national average, which is, you know, an all-time record yield, and that's where we get to a all-time record crop.
He talks about potential market and usage options for that much corn.
Well, I think in the short term, the two best options that seem to have some growth potential, and once again, this is in the short run, is ethanol and most definitely trade. I mean, we're going gangbusters right now on exporting corn and soybeans. You know, from what I hear, things are actually pretty well backed up at the Gulf, and, you know, that's actually a good thing for farmers because it means the world wants our corn right now, and we're more than willing to give it to them.
U.S. corn farmers produce more corn than can be used domestically or here in the United States, and there need to be opportunities to move that product across the seas. That's why NCGA wants to see the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement passed in the lame duck session of Congress.
Information going on about trade, which is unfortunate, but national corn growers and all farmers are standing solidly behind TPP. We see this as a chance to really set the trade rules by which the whole Pacific Rim is going to trade. It's better if we're the ones that get in there and help set those rules. So, you know, this could be a positive for, you know, corn, for DDG exports, But really, where some of the biggest benefit could be is exporting meat. There's nothing we like more than, you know, feeding cattle and pigs and chickens here in the U.S. and shipping corn abroad as a protein.
Bertels adds there's a lot of opportunity for American corn in international markets, especially with Brazil and Argentina coming off a short crop in their most recent growing season. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Let's take time now to check in on the agricultural cash grain market. We're joined by Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers in the soybean fields this afternoon?
I think so. We've got the sun shining, the wind blowing, and it's not too warm, not as warm as yesterday, but certainly for this time of year, it's good. So there's, I don't know, a third of the beans left out there locally, and I think they're going to try to hit them hard this week before the rain hits Wednesday, and then it'll be kind of hit and miss after that.
Have you been buying new beans as they rallied over the last couple of weeks?
I would have thought we would have been, but we haven't been. Farmers have not been. You know, they're selling some of the overrun bushels and that type of thing, but no, we really haven't seen the uptake in farmers selling either your corn or beans. Corn, we kind of understand the price is just kind of sitting there, but with the bean rally, I thought we might buy some beans, but we really haven't. Maybe farmers are waiting until they get done harvesting to see exactly what kind of numbers they've got to work with, but for whatever reason, we really haven't seen much farmer movement of corn or beans.
Clearly, they have a good number to work with, right?
On beans, I think so. We've heard good yields, better yields, and record yields on the beans. With corn, we've heard some good yields, we've heard some average yields, and we've heard a few disappointing yields on corn. So the corn is a little bit more variable, but the beans seem to be very consistently good.
Since they're not selling, are end users on the hunt?
Yes. It may be more order flow than anything else. We've got China buying beans every so often. Now with the Malaysian palm oil problem, we've probably got some other people, you know, trying to buy soybean oil instead of palm oil. And then the funds are long beans, but they show no signs of selling off their long positions. So you've got Chinese buying, fund buying, and, you know, some Malaysian-related buying going on, and farmers aren't selling. I guess that's, in a nutshell, why beans are going higher.
And what are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Cash corn tonight is $3.36. January is $3.43. Cash beans are $9.72. January $9.77. And new crop wheat is $4.33.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is here from Risk Pulse. He's in Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural weather for the day. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start in the Midwest. How's harvest season been progressing, and what do we see for the next week or so?
Well, really up to this point in October, we have had really good harvest progress due to the lack of any kind of extreme precip totals. You know, we go back to September is when there was some increase in concern because of wetness in the Corn Belt. But overall, things have been pretty good in recent weeks. And we feel that's going to continue through month's end and into the early part of November, as there continues to be a lack of any kind of widespread significant precip across the Midwest. It's not bone dry, and as we look out over the next several days, there will be rain activity in areas of Iowa, northern Illinois, Wisconsin. Totals could exceed an inch, maybe even an inch and a half within that corridor. But again, it looks short-lived. That'll be followed by fair and dry weather, so we do not see any issues there. And along with that, temperatures will continue to be unseasonally warm. That's especially true as we go into the upcoming weekend and on into next week. So again, this theme of just highly anomalous warmth prevails even as we move into the early part of November.
It's not too bad here, but in the Great Plains, it has been dry. Any relief in the offing for them?
We do not see any significant signs of relief in the Plains Hard Red winter wheat belt, especially over the next 10 days, where warm and unseasonably warm, even some areas near record temperatures in portions of the southern plains coming up over the next week to 10 days. Some model indications longer term of rains into that 11 to 15 day time frame, but that's highly, highly debatable right now. And for us, we're just continuing to call for persistence, which is warm and dry across the plains.
Still a good start to the growing season in South America.
It certainly is, Todd. They've had a really good start. There's been a little bit of dryness at times in southern Brazil, but in fact, that is now being improved in a significant way as rain activity has increased. And the bottom line is that across Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, the pattern for the next few weeks features generally near normal rainfall totals, and that will allow for a continuation of this good start to planting conditions.
And finally, in northeastern China, the farmers there couldn't buy a rain in parts of the summer months. Then it opened up and begun to get wet. Some flooding there. What about now?
Yeah, in fact, in some areas of northeastern China, talking about snow, that is starting to, causing some disruptions in harvest progress up in the province of Manchuria. Bottom line is that cooler than normal temperatures will continue in northeastern China. Precip will be lighter, but the fact that they're unseasonably cold, along with just light precip amounts, could still result in some disruptions there. If anything, the one area that's actually more on the wet side is their far southern part of their corn and soybean belt. That's been the wettest in recent weeks, looks to stay the wettest, especially this week. So some harvest disruptions there, but I actually think on the flip side, it's beneficial by boosting soil moisture and irrigation for winter wheat.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark. That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.